Today, live from New Orleans and Sacramento on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, there's a roller coaster on a cruise ship, and robots are delivering room service. And now comes the suggestion, should there be a women's only section on airplanes? How's that for a lively discussion item?
Annoying things passengers do. Well, mostly to each other on airplanes. At 3:20, we make you a smarter traveler by telling you the things not to do on airplanes. And yes, we've done this before, but it's a new and exciting list of horrible things that we do.
Sounds worth a listen. Then at 3:35, Clayton Whitehead and I take you to the Mississippi River towns of Vicksburg and Natchez on a cruise that ends tomorrow morning right here in the Big Easy.
Clayton has some great insight only a Southerner could share. And then at 3:50, Mark talks to the steamboat's Riverlorian. He's sort of a historian on the riverboat and part of the steamboat cruise experience.
Finally, I share my personal thoughts on the merits of a steamboating cruise. It is an authentic American original or a poor facsimile. Find out at 3:55.
The Travel News reports from a steamboat on the Mississippi. Mark live in New Orleans. Thanks for joining us for today's fast-paced edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano are your hosts. That's us, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And just as I was headed in to do the show, the skies have opened up. It is raining profusely here in Northern California. Going to get some good snow later on. In the meantime, let's go cross-country to New Orleans. Mark and Clayton in the old Sports Leisure Vacation Travelers have been steamboat. Mark, ahoy there, matey.
Well, ahoy there to you, Thomas. I have been on the Mississippi River in Portland, Oregon, on the Oregon coast. That was yesterday. And now back here in New Orleans, awaiting the arrival of about 50 travelers who are taking the steamboat down the river. I was with them for a few days. So in the back half of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about all of that. And everything that goes along with steamboating, it is one of the boat that we were on is the last authentic American steamboat, or at least you could have said that until a couple weeks ago. But as we've reported on this program, the Delta Queen, it looks like, is about to go back into operation. So she will be a river boat. There's, you know, the difference is where do you get your power from? Does it come from a steam engine or does it come from a non-steam type engine? So the ones on the American Queen were built in the 1930s and still get the boat up and down the river. It's kind of cool. You can go down into the engine room and find out about it. We will find out more about that kind of stuff when we talk to the Riverlorian and all that jazz in the second half of the program later on today.
Good, good. And please, I hope you're bringing back some photos that you can spread around on travelguysradio.com. I'd love to see that boat and what it looks like. All right.
Yeah, or maybe just some pictures. Maybe just some pictures of the beignets that I'm eating before I got. I've got powdered sugar all over part of my face here. I think it's I didn't have quite time to clean up before we started the show, so it's
excellent.
There's powdered sugar everywhere.
Excellent. When I walked in, I told Luis that that you were, you know, in the South and so forth, and the first thing he said was how much he misses the food. So now you've made it even worse for him.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. And the pralines, there's pralines in about every other store there. I was over walking around in the French Quarter a little bit before the program just so I could. I realized I haven't been in New Orleans or New Orleans, as they call it down here, since before the hurricane. And it's been 13 years since the hurricane.
Wow.
The man who brought me in from the airport said, I said, has it really been that long? He said, yeah, because I was rescued from the Superdome, so I kind of remember the date pretty well. So I said, yeah, well, I'll take your word for it. So we talked all about flashing back to 13 years and how the city is different now, how a lot of the residents who were here did not come back. And that included some of the more colorful people who made up the French Quarter. However, as he said, slowly but surely, new characters and interesting people have been coming into this. Really, Tom, New Orleans is one of the great cities in the country. It's a party city, but it's not really a Las Vegas sort of place. It has more of a party culture. Las Vegas is just a craziness place. Here, it's a little bit more controlled. And of course, the little towns on the Mississippi River Delta, Vicksburg and Natchez, are well worth a little bit of attention, and we will give them that attention in the back half of the program.
All right, follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. Got lots of stuff there for you to take a look at. And at the top of every Travel Guys Radio show, we bring you the travel news. Mark, what do you got for us?
Well, first of all, Tom, I want to mention that every week I often have more items to mention in this segment of the program than I have time to mention. So a lot of them are posted at TravelGuysRadio.com, right on the homepage there every week. Like this week, there's a story about going to Greenland, and the way to experience Greenland now is this company has built 5 igloos. And they will sleep a couple of people. So if you're looking for something really authentic, there's the lodge experience in Greenland. That's at TravelGuysRadio.com. There's also, this is always a little bit fun. These come out about once a year or so. This came from Smarter Travel, what not to do at a nude beach. You know, we've had that discussion before. This is a particularly good list. And then I found this on Flyer Talk, the mother of all Mile High Club stories. For those of you who don't know, the Mile High Club is when you fornicate on an airplane when it's not on the ground. That's known as the Mile High Club. So, and I suppose there's a variety of different ways to qualify for that. But nonetheless, we have found a story that really is the mother of all Mile High Club stories. First of all, it's a little bit too salacious to repeat on the air. And second of all, it would take 20 minutes. So go to TravelGuysRadio.com and read the mother of all Mile High Club stories, because it's pretty cool. And that kind of launches us into the first news story that we have here from the headlines. And it's, is it time for a women's only section on airplanes? This is something that has come up in 3 or 4 different places. Kate Whitehead, who was a travel columnist, has written a piece about it, and she says that she's complaining a little bit about man spreading and men who spread their legs on planes and who hog the armrests and who basically take, you know, women are in a position where if they don't push back against the man, then they're going to lose part of their seat. And she's kind of suggesting that that's probably not something that most women care to do. So she's saying, you know, what if there could be women-only seating rows on airplanes? And when I first thought about it, Tom, I thought, I think that's a little over the top. But the more I thought about it, as I was putting the news together today, I'm not sure. I have a hunch that women would find this to be an incredibly attractive thing, don't you?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I find it curious.
Well, here's the deal, though. Here's what's going to happen. If the ladies are all sitting in one row together, you're going to have, you know, 3 ladies. And ladies tend to be a little bit smaller than men on the average. And so then you're going to have these rows that are all men. So now these oversized guys are all going to be crammed in.
Yeah.
And that's why the ladies.
I'm going with the ladies.
That's why the ladies would be very much in favor, I'm going to bet you. If we just, let's just do a Travel Guys survey for a minute here. Ladies who are listening to the program here, if you would just help me out for a second. If just by a show of hands, please, if you would. How many ladies who are listening, who travel, who fly with any kind of frequency, would like to see women's only sections on the airplanes? Just raise your hands. Keep them up there for a minute.
Wow.
See?
10,
see?
20,
yeah.
30.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
almost 60? Everybody.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I'm thinking. That's a non-scientific Travel Guys survey. I think that's the first time we've ever done that on the Travel Guys program. Speaking of first times, Carnival Cruise Lines Mardi Gras is going to feature the first ever roller coaster at sea. You can see some pictures of this at on our website at travelguysradio.com. It's going to debut in 2020. It's going to be 190 feet above sea level. It's going to turn you up and upside down. It's going to culminate with a hairpin turn around the ship's iconic funnel. You know how Carnival has their logo painted on the funnel of their ships. So the roller coaster is going to take you around that. So, Tom, shall I sign you up for a ride? Or,
yeah. Well, you know I've been avoiding cruise ships because I was afraid I'd get seasick. Now this is what? What did we say? Insult to injury or something like that?
I'm waiting for the first time that the roller coaster comes around the corner and just propels itself right into space. You know, just goes right off the ship, right off into the water.
And oh, my it's,
gosh. Oh, man, a roller coaster?
Sure, why not?
I'm not even going to ask for a show of hands on this one because I'm afraid that too many of them would go up. It would scare me.
I bet you
but
they would.
I have friends who would do this, a roller coaster on the top of a cruise ship.
Sure.
Yeah, they'd be all. I would do it if the ship were docked. Don't ask me why that would make a difference, but it just would. If you are staying at the Hotel EMC Squared in Chicago, it is possible to order room service and have it delivered by a robot. You could order bottles of water or extra towels or sheets or even a meal or something like that. And indeed, the robot will show up. Again, things that you could find at travelguysradio.com, some pictures of the the robots in question at the Chicago hotel will deliver your. Now you don't have to worry about. Do you? I'm wondering, Tom. Do you tip a robot?
Absolutely not. You squirt him in the ear with a can of oil.
The Carnegie Deli has found a new life online. The legendary Carnegie Deli in New York City closed a couple of years ago. But people who liked the recipes there, particularly the pastrami, which was amazing, you can now find it. You can order Carnegie Deli sandwiches, Tom, online. The Carnegie Deli is famous, or was famous. Well, there are still outposts in Las Vegas and Madison Square Garden, but the one that was up at Times Square has closed. And they're famous for having these sandwiches that you cannot get your mouth around. What they call overstuffed sandwiches, which means, like, imagine if you were trying to, if you had two pieces of rye bread and in the middle you had 3/4 of a pound of pastrami.
Yeah, you know, that's not a sandwich. It's for looks. You got to take it apart and eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you go to the Carnegie Deli and it's not inappropriate to order extra bread so that you can, you know, have 3 sandwiches instead of just one. Delta Airlines has changed their rules once again on emotional support animals, and they've also changed the rules on dogs, particularly little dogs, puppies. If your dog is not at least 4 months old, it cannot fly on a Delta airline. There are some other rules. So if rule changes, there are emotional support animals will no longer be allowed on long-haul flights with Delta Airlines. There are new limits on the animal ages. So on flights longer than 8 hours, so we're talking about flights overseas and stuff, no emotional support animals will be allowed. So go to Delta.com and check out the new Delta Airlines rules, and perhaps those will be adopted by other airlines. Mostly Delta says it's because the emotional support animals are not behaving themselves on the airplane. And so if the dog is peeing on your leg, then and it happens enough times, then probably the airline is not going to be in favor of having your dog on the plane. And everybody knows that. Yeah, well, so there you go.
See, it just is one bad puppy spoils it for all the rest.
I'm going to suggest it's more than one. But, of course, this is not the case when the Romanos travel with their
animals
in tow.
Most well-behaved little travelers. In fact, better than the people that we're going to be talking about after the upcoming break.
One quick note here about the whole Marriott breach. I finally got my letter last week. You know, we talked about how Marriott, there apparently was an ongoing breach at Starwood for several years. Tom, did you?
Were you breached?
It says I might have been breached. There's no sign. I can't tell. I signed up. They offered you a couple of years of a free web protection that will let you know if you do get breached. At your Starwood guy, did you get anything from them or
nothing?
Nothing. Okay. Well, see, maybe you were not among the breachable group of people.
I'm unbreached.
So consider
whatever that
consider
means.
Is that kind of like what happens at security, getting breached?
Kinda,
no, that's probably something entirely different. Anyway, that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Again, check us out at travelguysradio.com. And as I alluded a minute ago, coming up, another list of things that people do that is disgusting and you shouldn't do it while you're on an airplane. That list is next with the Travel Guys.
I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
Well, we certainly started the Travel Guys radio program with some rain. I'll tell you, it's pretty wet out there. I hope everybody cleaned up their leaves. Saw lots of bags of leaves instead of piles of leaves. That was a good sign. We are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, here every Sunday, 3 to 4. I'm in studio here in Sacramento, and Mark is in New Orleans with his...
Hi there! Hi! You can almost see, I can almost see Sacramento from here, if it wasn't for the tall buildings in the Rocky Mountains.
Well, there you go. All right. Anyway, okay, Mark, where did you get this next list that we're going to go through?
I stole it off the internet. I get a whole bunch of these things, these feeds every week. Photo Travel sent it to me. Actually, I stole it. Another site stole it, and I found it there. It's a list of things that we do, annoying things that passengers do on airplanes. And a lot of times, these are lists that are compiled by flight attendants and the like. Well, this list was compiled. These folks talked to 150 travelers and frequent flyers, road warriors, and said, you know, what are things that really aggravate the bejesus out of you? And they are things, interestingly enough, like I said, that we do, in essence, to ourselves. I mean, these are things that are avoidable, preventable, etc. So let's see how many of them we can get through here before we get up against the news at the bottom of the hour. First one, you're making them gag with your double onion burger. So the point here is that if you're going to have something odoriferous to eat, do not bring it on the airplane with you. So that means if you have it in the airport, then you might want to have some breath mints or something like that. And please don't bring, you know, the smelly cheese or the smelly anything on the plane because it's really close quarters.
Yeah, garlic fries. No.
Yeah, you see, that's another example of a food that really is a small piece of heaven in the right place.
Agreed.
You know, like at a Giants game. But, you know, but other places, it's not. Perfume and aftershave creates a problem for some people who have allergies, but it creates a bigger problem for a smaller problem for a larger group of people who just don't care for the smells. The example they use is that vanilla cinnamon bun hand lotion that you adore and want to put on every 10 minutes does not remind us of anything we'd actually want to consume. So, you know, please be thoughtful. It's not only perfumes and aftershaves and stuff, but it's anything that you might put on your body that has a strong odor to it. You may care for it, but it's probably pretty likely that somebody within the range of that odor won't care for it. So do everybody a favor and go for something that doesn't have an odor. Bare feet. This is a big one on planes. In some religions, bare feet are considered to be really bad things. I don't know that that's necessarily in many of the religions in our country, but not everybody likes to look at bare feet. So if you're going to come on the airplane with sandals or something like that, may I suggest that you put a sock on it, you know, put two socks on it.
Well, you know,
especially
a lot of people fly with flip-flops, I tell you.
They do. And if you're, you know, I mean, really and truly, you could just put, I know how horrible it is fashion-wise to put flip-flops and socks on the same feet, but maybe you could make an exception for us on the airplane. And especially if you're going to use my armrest as your footrest, You're going to put your foot up on the back end of my armrest, and which is really kind of gross and disgusting. And so don't do that. And if you must do it, please put a sock in it. The window screen. If you're on the plane and you're going along and the plane is taken off and you notice that all the other window screens around you are closed and yours is open, a lot of people look at things on devices these days, and it helps a lot if the windows are closed. So if it's not a takeoff or a landing and you're sitting next to a window and you see that everybody else has closed theirs, then close yours. This is probably one that comes up the most often, and this comes up a lot with sports leisure travelers when we're out on tour. Listening to things without headphones. You think that your Aunt Martha's sick and your dog misses you and your spouse can't find the leftovers you put in your fridge, and guess what? We don't care about any of that stuff. Use the headset and keep it to yourself. Every time you put something in the back of your seat, every time you tap your screen, every time you close your tray table, anything like that, the person in the seat in front of you knows. So try to limit the amount of things that you put in and take out, because the person in front who might be, finally just fell asleep after an hour and then you've, done something. Please don't hog the armrest. Generally, the person in the middle seat, the golden rule is that they get first choice at the armrest and the space immediately above it. And once they've made their claim, why then you work around them. Here's another one. Your seatmate politely said hello, but you're still talking to them. Try to limit the amount of conversation that you're having. Here's my pet peeve, Tom, grabbing the seat in front of you for support. You're getting up from your chair, and so you grab the seat in front of you and you pull it back because you can't get up out of your chair, or you're going down the aisle and you're grabbing onto every seat as you go, and some of those seats have people in them, and so it's kind of fun to get the roller coaster ride. And finally, be careful about clipping your nails on the airplane. That is maybe the most gross and disgusting thing that people do on an airplane. Just, have you ever been hit by a flying toenail?
Okay, we got a break for the news. We'll go down the riverboat next with Mark and Tom. It's Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, and through the magic of radio, we join Mark and Clayton on board the American Queen in this segment of the Travel Guys.
Tom, Clayton, and I are here on the back deck of the American Queen as she gets ready to sail from Vicksburg to Natchez, Mississippi, overnight. It has been a great day here in Vicksburg. This is very much a Civil War city, and enjoyed a tour of the Civil War battlefields. If you've ever been to Gettysburg and you enjoyed that tour, you would enjoy touring the battlefields here at Vicksburg. Mr. Clayton, you have taken a lot of steamboat trips in your tour directing career. Tell us, as a river cruise as opposed to going on an ocean-going vessel, what are the advantages, disadvantages?
Well, of course, we're cruising in the Mississippi River right now. This was America's highway. This built our country. After the Louisiana Purchase, the Mississippi River is how commerce and people and a whole nation moved around. It's an incredibly important thread in the history of our country. And I think because it's in the middle, a lot of people kind of view this as a flyover destination. But this is real America.
Being in Mississippi and being practically a native Californian, and not spending a whole lot of time traveling in what most Californians would refer to as the Deep South, this is a little bit of a cultural adjustment to come here and see this. You're someone who grew up mostly in the South and now lives in California. Talk about that.
Well, I'm definitely a Southerner. We have a saying, Southern born, Southern bred, and when I die, I'll be Southern dead. And that's definitely my life story. My father's people came to the East Coast, to the Southern states, in the 17th century. My mother's people came in the 18th century. There was no Ellis Island for us. This was an agrarian society. It was a beautiful beautiful society. It was a society that was forever changed by the Civil War, but there's still a lot of beauty and grace here, and especially at times like now, I think it's important for Americans to know their country and see it from all sides and from all different perspectives, and that's really one of the advantages of being on a small boat, be it in domestic waters or in the rivers of Europe, is you're so close to the land, and you get off more times, and you spend more time off, you know what I mean? And that means you get more time with the local people. And that's where every travel experience is really at its best, is when you're meeting locals, meeting them in their spaces, listening to them talk, seeing their churches, their homes, shopping with them, dining with them, getting to know the world from their perspective. And of course, you might just find that it's not so different from your own.
It's been fascinating the last couple days here in Mississippi, yesterday in Greenville, and today here in Vicksburg. And one sort of gets the impression, I mentioned this earlier today, that there are some parts, and I know it's been 150 plus years, but it feels like there are some parts of the South that are still recovering from the Civil War.
Well, it's the defining moment in Southern history. And it will always be a part of who we are. You know, we are a defeated nation within a nation.
Right. But that was 150 years ago.
It was. It's hard to explain unless you grew up in it, unless you've lived it.
Well, that's why I asked.
The main thing I can say is just, you have to, everyone should experience it, because this is a part of what makes America, America. This is part of our collective narrative. This is part of the tapestry that has made our country the great country that it is. And for people who have never experienced it, or who just are happy with preconceived notions about what was good and what was bad and what's right and what's wrong, well, you're just looking at a little tiny corner of the picture, and you have to come here and visit it and see it for yourself.
You've answered my next question, in essence, is why would someone from California, what would drive someone who was born and raised in California to come here? And you're right, because it's part of the tapestry. It's part of the big picture. What's your favorite of these little cities up and down the river here? Do you have a favorite, or is there some aspect of the cities that is your favorite?
Pralines. The most incredible pecan butter and sugar candy. And in each of these little towns up and down the Mississippi River in the southern states, they have their renowned praline makers. And that's one of my favorite parts. In fact, on the very last day of our tour, I'm going to take the group to my favorite praline spot in New Orleans, because they don't keep very long or very well. So you want to get them fresh, and then we can rush them aboard our airplanes back to Sacramento and share them with friends.
I'm hoping to get on my plane with a little bit of powdered sugar from a beignet from Café Du Monde kind of on the sides of my mouth there.
Yeah, you're definitely going to get that too. A trip to Café Du Monde is a must for any trip to New Orleans. Of course, those are the French-style donuts that we've Southern-fied, is that a word? We've made them Southern. We've made them our own. And the only thing that would make them better is if they fried them in bacon grease.
So, Clayton, as we're kind of talking about the South here and stuff, and obviously you have a huge passion for travelers who are out there saying, wow, that sounds like a pretty interesting place. So when is Clayton going to take them to this part of the South?
Well, I do trips into this part of the world mainly in the spring. You know, Californians love heat, but they don't like humidity.
Yeah.
So you'll find that most of my tours to the Deep South and the Southeastern seaboard states, from Virginia south and along the Mississippi River, I usually plan them in March, or like now in December, so that humidity is not a factor.
It feels like the Calliope is about to start playing here in just a few minutes. We are edging away from the dock and the muddy Mississippi. We're going to be out on the muddy Mississippi here in just a few minutes on our way to Natchez, which is our next stop tomorrow morning.
Natchez is one of the greatest destinations in the South. More millionaires lived there in the mid-19th century than anywhere in the world. And, of course, they built houses and churches and public buildings to prove that. So it's definitely a place lost Lost in Time, but it's a beautiful place, Lost in Time. And if you like decorative arts, if you like incredible architecture, if you just like learning about other cultures, indeed, dare I say, a culture gone with the wind, then there's no better place than Natchez to experience it.
If you come here to the South, I must tell you, make sure that you allow yourself enough time to do exactly what Clayton was talking about, whether you take a river cruise that stops in these towns for a better part of a day, or you take an organized tour that takes you to some of them, or you just travel by car by yourself. Make sure that you allow enough time to be able to get out. And the beauty of this steamboat is that we don't have an automobile. We're required to sort of walk the streets or ride the shuttle bus, and it gives you the opportunity to just stick your head into little shops and buy a little treat or make a little purchase and talk to a shopkeeper and learn something about a destination that you didn't know before. Any parting thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say, even though the Mississippi certainly defines the South, we don't own all of it. Of course, it begins in the great state of Minnesota, and hint, hint, this coming October, I'm going to be doing a tour called Old Man River, which is a driving tour from St. Paul to St. Louis. So this will be the northern Mississippi, traveling extensively on the Great River Road. So that's another way to experience the Mississippi with a very different view.
We go down Route 66, call it the Main Street of America. We've taken people along the old Lincoln Highway. It seems appropriate to take them along the river that was known as America's Highway, the Mississippi. Thank you for your time, Mr. Whitehead.
Always a pleasure. Mark and Tom, y'all take care.
And if you're just joining us, we are the travel and entertainment guys, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, Clayton Whitehead, with Mark there on the riverboat. This is very cool. It's the theater of the mind. Radio can go places and take us places and make us feel things that, you know, it's just all kind of fun. And let's let the fun begin. Coming up in about 2.5 minutes, we're going to join Mark again on the riverboat. He's going to be visiting with a guy. His title is the Riverlorian. He's kind of the historian on the riverboat to help people enjoy their riverboat cruise even more. That's next here on The Travel Guide.
Job in the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost a minute of sleep.
I'm here with Jerry, who is the Riverlorian on the American Queen, and we're here in Natchez this morning before folks are about to head off on a variety of shore excursions into Christmas markets and stuff. Jerry, you told me you've been a Riverlorian on the rivers, on the steamboats here for 19 years. Tell me a little bit about what a Riverlorian is and what you do on the cruises to make them unique and different.
Well, as a Riverlorian, it's really my pleasure to help make the cruise both enjoyable and informative for the passengers. And in doing that, I have daily river talks. I call them Riverlorian chats. And depending on the area we're in is what I'll talk about, and cover that area. And I'll also talk about the rivers itself and kind of an orientation the first day out to help them understand what they're going to see along the way, what the ports are going to be like, and a lot of information to help them along the way. So each day it's something different depending on where we are. If we're on the Mississippi River, it'll be different talks than if we're on the Ohio River or on the Upper Mississippi or some of the other rivers, the Cumberland, the Tennessee. And so I offer that variety. Now, along with each talk, I spend a lot of time in the chart room where we are right now, and I'm here to answer questions and announce interesting things along the way on the PA system. I have books and charts and maps and binoculars they can check out from here.
You must be doing something right, because there's a crowd of people that kind of follow you wherever you go. Whenever you're doing something, I show up, and it took me 2 days to get a minute with you, because so many people are interested in what you have to offer. So really what you're doing is a combination of providing them with history and weaving it with information that might help them have a little bit better experience when they start exploring that history.
And entertainment, too, because I do have days where I do storytelling days, and those are always a lot of fun. River storytelling is a part of our river heritage, and Mark Twain proved the power of that, for sure. And so that's very entertaining. I don't teach them anything that day, just have a lot of fun. And stories are always coming up, even in the chart room and all that. And so what I really enjoy about the passengers is they are interested. They want to learn. They're here to do that. Mm-hmm. And I've often said, I love questions because curious minds keeps me in business.
Well, many of the people who are here are people who have been here before. So they have an expectation that there's going to be someone like you, maybe have already met you in previous trips, who will provide that information. And it's notable that over the years, many ocean-going cruise line companies have copied this concept of having somebody who can provide the kind of history and the kind of background that you can provide. We talked about the importance of authenticity in the tourism arena these days. Millennials have brought, they want things that are experiential. We don't see too many millennials on this ship, but nonetheless, they have driven a change in tourism to provide more experience. The steamboats have always provided that sort of experience and that sort of authenticity. What do you think makes this such an authentic tourism experience, Jerry?
Well, I think mainly because it is Americana. Steamboats were invented in the United States. That's where it began. And it was the first method of mechanical transportation in the United States. And so it is part of our heritage. And it's, over the years, it has evolved into something less cargo hauling and all as it did in the old days. It's more of a luxury method of travel, which we do now, but it still depicts those early days, those fine, opulent steamboats of the days. And that's what this boat does. It has taken the best of some of the fine boats in the early days, the J.M. White, the Indiana, the Grand Republic, and put them in one boat, and with modern conveniences, of course.
Right.
And so it is really part of our American heritage.
And so you think that's why people are attracted to this particular thing, is because it combines the opportunity. It's kind of an intermodal travel. Also, let's be honest, people who have gotten to the point in their life where they have a little less mobility and it's a little harder for them to get around, this is a very attractive way to travel because they can see a lot and it requires very little in the way of mobility. And I might comment that how impressed I am this week with the steamboat company's ability to provide people with additional services. A golf cart here and a golf cart there and things like that make a tremendous difference. And it also shows that somebody is thinking about those things.
Sure.
And I think that's a positive sign. We're down here in the Mississippi Delta. We started in Memphis. The boat is going to end in New Orleans in a couple of days. We've got a couple of plantations still to hit. We're in Natchez today. I really enjoyed the battlefield tour in Vicksburg yesterday. I had never been there before. And it's Gettysburg on steroids if you've never been to Vicksburg Battlefield before. It's really fascinating. Jerry, tell me, is there a part of this section of the river that you particularly like, or a city or something about this section of the river that's special to you?
Well, if I'm on a river, I'm happy. But anywhere, that's what I do. But one thing I would like to point out, too, is along with the steamboat as being an attraction, it is the river, too. People want to see the mighty Mississippi River. And, you know, it was Mark Twain who put it on the world map and made it famous. And people want to see this river. And the beautiful thing about river travel is there's always something to look at. As opposed to being on an ocean, you see sky and water. But on your way to your destination, there's always something to look at. And that's what I'm always busy pointing out, those interesting things along the river. Sometimes you're just waiting to go around the next bend to see what's next. And that adds to the fascination of it. But here on the lower Mississippi River, Natchez is actually my favorite town to stop at. I really enjoy Natchez, the antebellum homes, the wonderful people, the friendly atmosphere. And it's typical down south, old south, and you meet some great people down here. So I like that, and the history of the area. Because today I'm going to be focusing on the rough and rowdy early days on the river. And that's portrayed right here at our landing at Natchez under the hill. And so it's a special interest because of not only the history, but it's a very beautiful place.
Well, and you do a good job, Jerry, of getting people interested in something. Some of your talks the other day was what led me to take the Civil War tour, and then I got out there and found out that I was totally fascinated with it. So the ability to be an influencer here on board is important. Before I let you go, is there anything that you would like to share with the folks who are listening in Sacramento that might help them make a decision if they're considering a steamboating trip?
Well, I would say if you're planning a steamboat trip, this is the boat to take, because it is an authentic steamboat. It's true steam. It's the only operating overnight passenger steamboat on the rivers right now. There are other other boats. And some are paddle wheel, and that's fine, but they're diesel powered. Some are not real paddle wheels, but this is the real thing. So it's a true steam engine built in 1932 and refurbished and put in this boat in 1995.
Yeah, so you can go down to the engine room and look at it.
You can. So it is authentic, and I love that about it. Not only that, even with 418 passengers, we don't seem full. We there's plenty of room.
Yeah,
it's a big boat. There's plenty of space around there, so it's comfortable. And we have all these facilities like the chart room. The Grand Saloon's a wonderful room, too, for all the things we have there, the activities and all. So this would be the boat to take. And I guess one piece of advice would be, if you come for a seven-day cruise, you might want to bring looser fitting clothes toward the end of the cruise, because the food is great.
And one thing we should point out to people is that, who maybe took a steamboating trip 20 years ago, is leave the coat and tie at home. Because
there's not
any reason to bring dressy clothes any longer. Even the formal events on board are casual.
Yeah, it's called country club casual for dinner, but that's in each person's own eyes of what that exactly means,
yeah.
I suppose.
Well, wear a sport coat and maybe a nice sport shirt. Just look respectable.
Yeah.
Take a shower.
Leave your tuxedos and your ties. You don't really
Yeah, okay. You don't need them on a steamboat trip. Jerry, thank you so much for a little bit of your time this morning, and good luck to you on the river.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to have you aboard.
Well, there you go. Mark, I have to ask.
Yes, sir.
The steam, you said you got a chance to go down and see the engines. Do they are they wood or coal?
Are they wood or coal?
Yeah, do they heat the steam? You know, obviously they have to burn something to make the steam. So did you get a chance to see whether they burn coal to make the steam, or do they burn wood?
Wow. That's a really good question. I can't answer that.
Okay,
but
that'll
be my homework assignment for tomorrow morning. I'm sure the steam is created probably in a boiler.
Right.
And the question is, how is the boiler heated?
Exactly.
So in the 30s, that's one of the reasons they had fires on riverboats, is because you've posed a great question. And the River Lorien was explaining to me kind of off camera, you know, the difference between steamboats and riverboats. Anybody can have a boat on the river. It's not steam powered. Mm-hmm. So that, I thought that was kind of interesting. The steamboats have been on the river in America for a long time. I mean, they are a part of, and now the American Queen Steamboat Company has three river boats, the American Queen and two others. There are several other companies that ply the Great Lakes or that have smaller boats that do the coasts or that do some of America's rivers in the central part of the country. As far as the American Queen steamboat, this is the first time I had been on the boat in a number of years. It went in the water, I want to say, in 1994, 97, something like that. So it's not a brand new vessel, but it's not an old bucket of bolts either. It's a nice boat with nice accommodations on board. I thought the accommodations, I had a single stateroom to myself. One advantage of the American Queen is they have some cabins, Tom, that are single staterooms. So they're much smaller and they accommodate one person. So the person doesn't, if you're traveling solo, you don't have to pay that single supplement.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it so much more expensive when you don't have someone to pay the other half of your hotel room with you. So the accommodations were nice. The service on board was generally good. Clayton made, I thought, a good point when he said he thought the service was a little better when the steamboat company was headquartered in New Orleans rather than in Memphis where they are now, because he said the people in New Orleans are a little bit more into the whole service aspect of things. I can't necessarily disagree with him on that. It doesn't mean the service is bad. I just think that maybe perhaps it used to be a little bit better. The food on board any cruise ship is always mediocre, average. They dress it up and put a lot of sauces on it and serve you all the time so that you're busting at the seams. But the reality is that most of the food is not, the steaks are not of high quality. And, most of the food that they're serving you is not class AAA. Shore excursions I thought were terrific. I went to Regina Charbonneau's house, learned to make biscuits. That was wonderful. And Natchez did a Civil War tour in Vicksburg. They weren't inexpensive, but I thought they were well worth the money. I guess the one thing I would say most about a steamboat trip is it really is an authentic experience. And there aren't that many really authentic experiences out there of in that category. So despite a few little warts and stuff like that, I give it two thumbs up. I think it's an experience that if you haven't tried it, it's something you should look into.
Well, outstanding. Well, thank you for taking us along the Mississippi. Thank Clayton. And we look forward to seeing you next week. It's the last show before we head towards New Year's, right before Christmas show. So, Mark, thanks again. You travel safe. And final words.
Dance like nobody's watching.
See you next time, my friends. Stay well.